Brian Lehrer, WNYC, good morning, and you have woken up to a different political world this morning than it was yesterday at this time. President Obama and congressional Republicans have struck that deal to extend the Bush tax cuts, including for the wealthiest Americans, in exchange for another, that's going to be for 2 years, in exchange for extending unemployment benefits for 13 months. And other breaks, mostly that the Democrats like. It also includes a new compromise on the estate tax, which will become lower than it was under President Bush. This is considered a victory for the Republicans, a 35% tax only on the value of estates over $5 million. The first $5 million pass on tax-free. Some other things in the deal, though, not getting as much press. Expand the earned income tax credit and child credit for low-income families. Continue a college tuition tax credit for certain families. Allow businesses to write off certain equipment purchases. This would maintain the top capital gains tax rate of 15%, and Republicans like that, although they wanted a zero capital gains rate, and adjust the alternative minimum tax so that fewer upper middle class families are hit by it. This will also be another $900 billion hole in the deficit, as this entire package is paid for by borrowing. Many Democrats, as you know, are livid and disappointed in the president. Some conservatives don't like it either. Center-right deficit hawks are wincing. We will dive down on the details in the first segment of our show today and try to help you understand this package before judging it. Then you can judge away. We'll begin with an extended excerpt of President Obama's remarks about the deal from last night. So dig in, show a little patience, listen to the president for the next 2.5 minutes.
I have no doubt that everyone will find something in this compromise that they don't like. In fact, there are things in here that I don't like, namely the extension of the tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and the wealthiest estates. But these tax cuts will expire in 2 years. And I'm confident that as we make tough choices about bringing our deficit down, as I engage in a conversation with the American people about the hard choices we're going to have to make to secure our future and our children's future and our grandchildren's future, it will become apparent that we cannot afford to extend those tax cuts any longer. As for now, I believe this bipartisan plan is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do for jobs. It's the right thing to do for the middle class. It is the right thing to do for business, and it's the right thing to do for our economy. It offers us an opportunity that we need to seize. It's not perfect, but this compromise is an essential step on the road to recovery. It will stop middle-class taxes from going up. It'll spur our private sector to create millions of new jobs and add momentum that our economy badly needs. Building on that momentum is what I'm focused on. It's what members of Congress should be focused on. And I'm looking forward to working with members of both parties in the coming days to see to it that we get this done before everyone leaves town for the holiday season. We cannot allow this moment to pass. And let me just end with this. There's been a lot of debate in Washington about how this would ultimately get resolved. I just want everybody to remember over the course of the coming days, both Democrats and Republicans, that these are not abstract fights for the families that are impacted. 2 million people will lose their unemployment insurance at the end of this month if we don't get this resolved. Millions more of Americans will see their taxes go up at a time when they can least afford it. And my singular focus over the next year is going to be on how do we continue the momentum of the recovery, how do we make sure that we grow this economy and we create more jobs. So we cannot play politics at a time when the American people are looking for us to solve problems.
President Obama explaining and defending his tax cuts and benefits compromise last night. We have a poll on our politics website. It's freecountry.org that simply asks, how do you feel about the proposed compromise. Some of the comments already coming in. I'm a Democrat, and I think the president betrayed his base. Oh, these are the choices. I'm a Democrat, and I think the president betrayed his base. I'm a Democrat, and I understand that we need to compromise. I'm a Republican, and I think our party betrayed its values. I'm a Republican, and this compromise is worth it to keep the tax cuts. Or it's complicated. Go answer that poll question at itsafreecountry.org. Progressives, we know you hate this, but did the president do what he had to do? Tea Party movement supporters, are you down with this deal? Does this hold the deficit above all else, as the Tea Party often says it does? Post to itsafreecountry.org or call us right now at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Conservatives, I've got redstate.com here saying true conservative Republicans will oppose this deal because it turns unemployment into welfare and does not relieve the uncertainty that is holding businesses back from hiring and investing. What do you think? From left, right, or other, we'll save some phone lines for each of you. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And we have Peter Coy, economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek, and Michael Shearer, Time Magazine White House correspondent. Peter, Michael, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
Peter, let's do some of the economics of this first. Is this really $900 billion, nearly another $1 trillion of borrowing?
We don't know the exact number yet. 900 is one I've seen. Another number I saw was a little over $700 billion. It partly depends, I guess, on what you assume the base case is, you know, what would have happened if it hadn't been for this deal. But certainly it's a huge sum of money. And to me, this deal is all about taking the path of least resistance. It was, on the one hand, Obama needed to answer to the Republicans. On the other hand, he needed to answer to his the liberal base. And what he did is he came up with a compromise that gives something to both sides at the cost of adding massively to the debt. So in the short run, the easy course is to make everybody happy by giving the tax cuts and keeping the spending. In the long run, of course, that's unsustainable, and you run smack into a bridge abutment. But that hasn't happened yet, and so this deal is what kind of thing that tends to happen.
So, Michael, politically, what happened to pay-as-you-go? I mean, from the Republican side, they were holding up the unemployment extension because the Democrats weren't paying for it.
President Obama is exploiting a sort of logical fallacy in Republican politics that tax cuts never add to the deficit in a way you have to worry about, and spending always adds to the deficit in a way you have to worry about. So all this deficit, this adding to the deficit, is being done through tax cuts, which Republicans are of the habit of defending as being good for the economy and good for the bottom line in the long run. So that's basically how he did it. I think when the president walked into this, he had two political priorities coming out of the midterm elections. One, he had to get back on the side of the American people. He'd lost the American people when it came to the economy. So he wanted to portray himself as someone who was fighting for the American people, everyday people. Second, he had an economy that was not growing like he wanted it to grow, like he thought it was going to be growing in the beginning of 2010. And he needed to figure out how to get more stimulus into the economy, basically passed a Republican Congress that just won an election based in part by bashing his stimulus plan of 2009. And for the White House, they feel that this is a victory because they've achieved both those goals. You heard in the president's remarks there, he's really saying, look, I don't like this. It's tough medicine. I don't like the taste of it, but I'm fighting for you. We need to get the economy going again. We need to be there for, you know, the unemployed, for people who need this money. And then on the economic front, economists say that if you throw this much more money into the economy, you're going to have not a huge, but a significant impact on GDP. That'll have an impact on unemployment. And when 2012 rolls around, President Obama will be in a slightly better position.
By the way, this just in from London, a judge has denied bail for Julian Assange. So just throwing that little wiki bomb into the mix here, and we'll talk about that later in the show, but no bail for Julian Assange in London, just decided, and that news from London. So Peter Coy on the business side again, do you think this will have a significant impact on that business uncertainty and unleash hiring and investment?
Well, I do not agree with the theory that says that what was holding back business was uncertainty about tax policy. If you think that the big uncertainty was over whether to extend the Bush tax cuts for the highest income earners, then you have to think that, first of all, it was looking likely that that was going to happen anyway. So businesses were probably thinking that was in the pocket. But second, really, is that what would make you change your mind about whether or not to invest or not, whether there's going to be a top income tax bracket shift? I don't see that that is what businesses want to know is whether there's going to be demand for their products. That's the uncertainty, and that's what needs to be resolved, and that we need to do that by, of course, stimulating economic growth.
And what about the Simpson-Bowles Commission? You know, I mentioned Red State's Eric Erickson, who's railing against this today, and he writes, see if I can find this exact script. Let's see. He writes, about turning unemployment into welfare,
yeah,
but about
yeah,
Simpson
yeah.
Bowles, he says, we can first laugh. Here it is. We can first laugh about Alan Simpson and Erskine Bowles after all that work, lecturing and lamenting that they have been, in one act, put back under the rock from whence they came.
You know, I happen to agree that that's exactly what seems to have happened here, that the Deficit Reduction Commission made the headlines for approximately 13 milliseconds, and they've been forgotten about already. This compromise, which I term just a path of least resistance, just says the deficit and the debt, the mounting debt, take a back seat to short-term political priorities.
I think it's slightly more complicated in that Simpson-Bowles were not against a short-term payroll tax cut, which is one of the things you see in here, and that most
of
these.
That's true. They favored it.
And most of these cuts are short-term. They have an expiration date. The Simpson-Bowles, the bigger deficit commission problem, is a long-term, mid-term deficit issue. Where this is a warning sign is it shows that no one has yet to prove that anybody in Congress is willing to do the responsible thing unless they're getting paid.
Yeah.
And so as a precedent, it's really bad for Simpson-Bowles. I don't know if this is exactly a refutation. I think, you know, they wouldn't say that pumping money into the economy in the next year or two is the worst possible thing that could happen for the long-term deficit. But the fact that the only way you can get anybody to vote on your side is to give them hundreds of billions of dollars is the worst possible thing for the long term.
Right.
Exactly.
And so
I agree with Michael completely on that one. That was what I was trying to say unsuccessfully.
Good. And so, Michael, what about the Republican politics of this? You know, again, from Eric Erickson on Red State, for months the GOP has said they would never vote to raise taxes and will now vote to raise taxes by resurrecting the death tax instead of killing it. The only reason being John Kyle of Arizona wanted to bring it back and has held this position for a while. We all know who the real conservatives are in Congress. They'll be the Republicans who oppose this deal. Now, I realize this is one far-right site, but it's one that's read a lot, and I wonder if this reflects what's going on in the Tea Party around the country today.
So I think that specific quote is a little disingenuous. The Bush tax cuts on the estate tax were set to expire. It was going to pop up to 55% if nothing was done. So it's going down to 35%. There's an argument over baselines. Conservatives have long argued that once a tax goes down, it can never go up, even if it's scheduled to go up, and that's a tax increase. And in fact, Bush never passed an unending estate tax cut. That was never the case. I think, though, there is a real contradiction here with the Tea Party, and I think it has to do with Republican electoral politics. The way Republicans pay their voters is through tax cuts. The way Democrats pay their voters is generally through spending. And both sides in election seasons refuse to acknowledge that their paying of their voters is irresponsible. Now, the Tea Party movement is slightly different because it's incredibly focused on the deficit. It's incredibly focused on responsibility and making sure future generations don't have to pay for our carelessness today. And yet, even during the 2010 cycle, there wasn't really an acknowledgement among the Tea Party crowd or among the Eric Ericksons that continuing the Bush tax cuts was going to have a huge deficit impact.
Right.
And so what the president has done is basically exploited that contradiction here. And I think it's going to be interesting over the next several days. It's possible we don't have a vote on this in the Senate until next week. At some point, the Joint Committee on Taxation is going to come out with a score. It's going to be an enormous number. It could scare a lot of people. This is an agreement among leaders, but it could still fall apart, and you could have a sort of populist uprising on the right and the left over this, which could make it more complicated. You know, the other thing to mention is that traditionally, when things become more complicated in the Senate and the House, all that means is you add more ornaments to the Christmas tree. So this would become more expensive. Ben Nelson mm-hmm. would come and say, you know, what about the thing for my corn growers or the right. thing for this? So it's not a done deal yet. But I do think it's an issue. And I do think going into 2012, and this is, you know, following the line of what Simpson and Bowles were saying, both parties actually have to begin honestly dealing with the fact that they get elected by giving away the store, and right now Republicans have not done that. They if you ask any Republican on the Hill about a tax cut, they say, oh no, tax cuts are good for the economy, that's not the real problem with deficits, it's this. They sort of say, look the other way. If you ask a Democrat about Social Security spending or Medicare or things like that, they say, oh no, the real issue is that they right. won't let us raise taxes.
Well, we'll see if there's a Tea Party revolt. Here's Tea Party Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann before the president spoke yesterday with Sean Hannity.
This is becoming a long-term welfare program.
Well, and that's why I don't know that Republicans will necessarily go along with that vote. That'd be a very hard vote to take, because 3 years of unemployment is something we've never seen before in the history of the country, and I don't know where they're going to come up with the money to pay for that. We don't have it.
On the unemployment extension by that 13
just,
months.
Like that kind of a soundbite just proves the point. She's saying we don't have the money on an unemployment extension, which economists will tell you is actually pretty good as a stimulating vehicle. But she would never say that about extending the Bush tax cuts.
Christine in Westport, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling because yesterday you had a caller named Matt who called in uh-huh. and said that it wouldn't be so bad. He was just so level-headed. I'd like to say I want to vote for Matt. But I really think that, you know, being a Democrat and going out and knocking on doors in three or four states and making thousands of phone calls, I really want to reiterate what Matt said yesterday and said, I did all that work and that's not who I am. I've never done anything like that before. Because I wanted the Democratic agenda to move forward as well as voting for the man. And I feel like we've really gotten ourselves in a situation where we are giving up all of the leverage that we had and we worked so hard for to the other side. And we had, you know, I just don't agree with extending the Bush-era tax cuts. I am a middle-class person, and if I had to pay more taxes next year, I wouldn't be upset about that. So I'm curious as to see how they always come up with the idea that the middle class would be so devastated. I mean, it's no fun to want to find somewhere else in my budget in this economy to find a way to help pay for our political choices.
Christine, thank you very much. And the draft Matt movement has begun. Thank you.
Hey,
Jerry
Brian.
In West Orange, you're on WNYC. Jerry, oh, we lost Jerry. Yeah, was that Peter?
Yeah. I just want to go back to the quote you read about comparing extending unemployment benefits to welfare.
Yeah, that's what Michelle Bachmann was doing.
Yeah, I'm working on an article for the magazine this week where I've been reviewing the economic research on that question. And the research shows that there is a very small effect at which probably there are some people who might get jobs but don't get them because they have the cushion of unemployment benefits. But that effect is fairly small, accounts for quite a small portion of the total increase in the unemployment rate. And there are offsetting benefits, such as the humanitarian benefit to the people and their families who are out of work, and the stimulative effects of the spending that they do for the overall economy. Especially at a time when the unemployment rate is exceptionally high, there aren't that many jobs to be had in the first place. So the evidence is that extending unemployment benefits has far more benefits than drawbacks.
And, Peter, let me go down with you the list of other provisions here real quick. Let's just tick off these real quick and explain very briefly what each of them does. I think we can leave the estate tax aside. We know the estate tax under Bush was 45% for estates over $3.5 million.
It phased out year by year. It got smaller and smaller until it was zero this year and was scheduled to go back up. And now there's going to be one, but it'll be much easier on the rich than it would have been.
Right. So the first $5 million of an estate are tax-free, and after that it's a 35% tax.
Or $10 million for a couple, by the way.
That's what, if they both die at the same time?
Actually, I don't know how that works.
Because then the couple, the first to die, leaves the money to the other
one.
Yeah,
that's a good question. I don't understand that part.
All right. But then you have expand the earned income tax credit and child tax credit for some low-income families. Republicans right. didn't want that?
Right. Those are clearly aimed at the working class, lower-middle-income. The college tuition, of course, is more broad. You know, one of the most interesting things is the payroll tax replaces the Obama's Making Work Pay program, and the difference is that it applies to all Americans regardless of income. So the Republicans felt it was important that not be limited just to the lower income groups, and of course, making everyone eligible for it increases the cost, the lost revenue.
Right,
from
that's
that.
The Social Security tax. So it's basically
right,
it's basically about a 2 percentage point income tax cut for everybody who pays income taxes, correct?
Well, it's payroll taxes, though, rather than
right.
income taxes.
Right.
It's your Social Security.
How about that college tuition tax credit? That's for any family making up to about $120,000, was it, if they're paying for their kids' college?
Yeah, can't remember the number on that. And then there's the business equipment purchase one, which is actually a huge deal. This is such a big, big package that each one of these things merits a lot of attention. But just to mention the business equipment one, basically you would get to write off the entire value of any equipment purchases that you make in 2011 against your taxes. So they estimate that could be of like $150 billion of value right there, and they're hoping, of course, that it'll cause businesses to accelerate their equipment purchases, and that'll get the economy going.
Bill in Jackson Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how's it going?
All right.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm looking at this thing a little differently. I'm looking at the mechanics of the compromise rather than the nature of the package they agreed on, and I'm looking at a president who just doesn't know how to deal and sell. The horse trading that's implicit in politics is just beyond him. It seems a skill he did not master when he was a state legislator or a U.S. senator. And this is going to bode ill for the remainder of his presidency, because anything that comes up that requires a sign-off from the White House, he will be dealing from a position of weakness.
Michael, you're the White House correspondent in the room. What do you think?
It's definitely a criticism, and it's a dominant criticism among progressives, both on the Hill and outside of Washington. But it is worth pointing out the situation Obama found himself in. He has 58 Democrats right now in the Senate. He needs 60 to break a filibuster. When there was a vote on Saturday on not extending tax cuts for those over making more than $250,000, he lost four Democratic caucus senators, including Joe Lieberman, on that. He lost Feingold as well, but that was for different reasons. But he was starting, if he wanted to really go hard on this and really fight against raising taxes on, fight for raising taxes on the richest 2%, he would have had to somehow come up with six votes, including two Republicans. And the calculation from the White House was he could beat his head against a wall and go barnstorming across the country, and even though this issue polls very well, you know, jump up and down and scream, and he wouldn't get himself anywhere. He would actually just get himself a loss, and he'd be facing a weaker position, because then he'd be responsible, or if the White House viewed it this mm-hmm. way, he'd be viewed as being responsible for allowing taxes on everybody to go up.
Yep. One more call. Paul in Bay Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a small business owner, and I don't see it as a tax increase. And if my taxes are increased, I may have to lose or cut back on my employee time. If my figures are correct, I think 70% of the people making over $250,000 are S corporations, and therefore the money we make is, in the business is also our income. So, you know, the disparity in the increase that would have been projected is significant on someone making $250,000 or more.
In other words, if that tax had gone up again for you as somebody making more than $250,000 as a small business owner, it would have come right out of your pocket to the point where you would have had a cut back on your employee time.
Exactly.
How do you feel about the compromise then? Are you okay with the whole package?
Of course, because it also increases unemployment benefits, which was a bargaining chip, and I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Paul, thank you very much. So somebody supports the compromise, and I guess we'll see in the polls in the coming days how many people do. Just tell me one last thing, Michael Shearer, again, as a White House correspondent, does this compromise increase the likelihood, which I think was previously zero, that President Obama would face a primary challenge from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party in 2012?
It may, but I don't think it increases the likelihood of a serious primary challenge. I mean, I think we're in a political environment where all it takes to run for president is a website, and so it's pretty likely that someone will jump at the chance. But I don't see anything in any of the polling, or even with him bargaining away this key campaign promise, to suggest that person will get any traction.
No one to play Ted Kennedy 1980 to his Jimmy Carter.
Not yet, no.
Michael Shearer, White House correspondent for Time Magazine. Peter Coy, economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
And again, listeners, you can weigh in yourself with the poll that we have at our politics website. It's freecountry.org that asks, how do you feel about the proposed compromise? State your opinion at itsafreecountry.org. Hey, did you hear that they actually lost 200,000 votes from New York City on election night this year? Well, they found the votes, but we'll explain why this potentially disastrous mishap took place with Sam Roberts from the New York Times in a minute.